talking to you about the context of our program to kind of give you some background first on where I'm going with this session. Again, we were hearing from the field in the community, our public school districts, that our kindergarten teachers were having some difficulty with young children, particularly in regard to their social emotional development, supporting that, as well as handling and managing the classroom. We had, in particular this past semester, five kindergarten teachers who were put on an intervention plan because that was their main concern or their main issue was managing the classroom. And so it's only three of us early childhood colleagues, only two of us were doing some supervision, so we didn't have supervision of some of our own teachers. They're kind of supervised by different people in the field, retired professionals like many of your programs. And so there's a lot of inconsistency in our program, and we recognize that. So one of the reasons I wanted to develop this particular session was because of all these experiences. Number one, I was curious about what are other institutions doing in regard to teaching teachers about supporting social emotional development and guidance of young children. I had read through the literature as I was trying to scramble to get together this course, but unlike courses like multicultural education or service learning courses, there's not too much literature out there, at least I didn't come across in my research, of information about how we're teaching teachers to support social emotional development. What are some strategies that you're using, and what are some different topics that you're addressing? And so I selfishly designed this topic or this session so that I could learn from you all, but then so I could also share what I am doing or what I have done, okay? And so this gives us all an opportunity for development, and I felt like I wasn't getting enough opportunities to interact with other faculty members or instructors or trainers out in the field, or individuals, some of y'all may be working in school districts or childcare centers where you're supporting teachers and trying to teach them. So this gives me some support as well, so it works both ways. So what we'll do in this session, I'll talk a little bit more about the context. I've already given you some of that information about where I'm coming from and the lens I'm looking through. And then I'll talk about some resources and some texts that I found valuable. And then I'd want to hear from you all, what are some resources and texts that you've used to help support teachers? So I'll give you all an opportunity at your tables to talk to each other about what are some of those resources that are texts that you found valuable in your practice. And then we'll share out together. I'll have some of you all come to the mic and share. And then I'll talk about some learning experiences. What do you provide to support your teachers? What do you provide to inform your teachers about social emotional development, whether that's case studies or videos, or how do you support them out in the field? And so I'll share again some of the things that I've done, and then I'd like for you all to take some time to talk in your groups or at your tables about what are some things that you've been doing, and again, we'll share together. And then we'll talk about some assessments, and particularly if you're teaching a course, how do you assess that your teachers are learning and able to implement social-emotional development, or how to support social-emotional development and guide young children? So what are you doing in your courses or in your practice? And then lastly, we'll spend quite a bit of time doing a collaborative activity at your table. Well, you'll choose a topic at your table, and then you'll take the time and develop a way to address that topic in your course. How would you teach that particular topic in your own course, okay? So that's the agenda for this particular session. All right, so the objectives is for first for you all to be able to identify topics discussed in courses and professional development in regard to social emotional development and guiding young children. The second objective will be to for you all to evaluate some of those approaches or texts. Which texts have you found valuable? Which approaches have you found valuable, and which ones not so much? Okay, and why? And then third, what's missing from some of these approaches or tech that you supplement? What do you say? You look at it and you say, well, you know, they're not talking so much about building community, so this is what I do to supplement, okay? And then lastly, you'll develop those practical learning experiences together, like I talked about, right? So first question, and I just want you all to think in your groups together, and then we'll share. What happens when teachers do not have an understanding of social-emotional development and how to guide children? What happens? Okay, so take a moment at your table and talk about that. What are some of the outcomes?
Yeah, let's go to that one. Where's this? Okay.
If you still have an understanding of what the social emotion is, that's when you have children that will be more challenging in the classroom than a regular child. If you have a frustrated child.
But also see chaos in the classroom, disorganization, lack of
communication.
Chaos. And there's also emotionally.
I'm going to be a listener because I'm not a teacher of children. I'm a teacher of adults.
I am too, but.
Oh, but you're probably teachers of adults who teach children.
Yes.
Right. I'm a peripheral. I teach English
as a second language.
Oh. And so my interest in this conference is, you know, helping people who are non-native speakers get into this field, and also parents and that sort of from that aspect. So. Do you teach in a child development department?
I teach in a two-year community college.
Oh, okay, so the one. And what department is that?
Well, I'm actually in a allied health and education.
Oh, okay.
So I teach early childhood education.
Oh, okay, great. And are you also early
I'm a college teacher.
College teacher?
Where are you? In Upper State, New York, near Albany.
And we're doing some masters. One of the three. Oh, three is really great.
Very good. Okay. Yeah, 64 campuses.
How many?
There's 64 campuses.
Not all of them have
a lot. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
It's like huge. California.
Exactly. You know.
Wow.
So there's, you know, the SUNY system is very large, and then you have the Berkeley system, which is on Manhattan, Bronx, you know.
All right.
And where do you teach, ma'am?
No. I'm a child development director.
What I'm going to do
I work
is
with
kind
the
of come
children
around
as well,
to
give the
a couple
help
of different
teachers
tables,
and
I'll do this throughout and ask
okay.
you to share
in
your
what
response
instance?
Or one of your responses
so
to
have a
this
of
question and some of the other questions I'll have as we go along. Okay, so I'll start over here.
I was just talking about how specifically we have children that rely a lot on comfort items, and as they get older, our center concentrates on children between ages of 1 and 5. And so as the children are getting older, I noticed that the teachers of the preschool and pre-K classrooms really want to separate comfort items from children to get them to be more independent in the environment. And this can cause a lot of stress. And so I am curious as to whether or not this should be supporting the comfort items that come into the classroom, or is this something that we should look at gaining more independence from as they become more school-aged?
All right. If someone wants to respond, I don't have a specific answer for you for that, but you're welcome to do that. And I'm curious to hear what were some other responses. What are some other things that happen when we don't support, when our teachers do not have an understanding of social emotional development or guidance? What were some things that were possible? Our table discussed, I think
what happens is, basically, I was speaking from the standpoint of California, because that's where I live. It seems we get newer students out of from the educational system that are not well-versed in and having a good understanding of how infants and toddlers roll, basically. And so, therefore, their expectations of them are not fair to the child because they don't have realistic expectations of their behavior. And therefore, as one of our ladies mentioned at the table, it's kind of a self-fulfilling thing. You know, the child misbehaves because that's the child's way of communicating. Behavior is communication. And then the teachers start to think or label them as not a bad child, but a problem child. And so I think if teachers don't come to you, or if there isn't a way that you can help them understand the early brain development and the needs of infants and toddlers and how they're very, very different than preschoolers, then you're setting a lot of people up for failure, and most importantly, the child. And also the family role is much, much more important with infants and toddlers.
All right, so what we're getting at with this particular question is the expectations of the teacher becomes unrealistic if there's not a good understanding of social-emotional development or how to guide young children. And that can be detrimental to the child. They can be mislabeled, that problem child, whenever we just don't have a good understanding for that of that particular child and their needs, okay? Some of the things that are often used or that I've seen that are used with teachers to help them to develop an understanding of social-emotional development and how to guide young children are those that you see here listed. And these are things that I've used just based on what I've learned for the Omaha community, some of the common things, and then some things that are used nationally as well. So the first one, the Center on the Social and Emotional Foundations of Learning, or CEFL. Are any of you all using CEFL or training in CEFL? I personally never went through the formal training of CEFL, but there's a lot of great resources on that website to help teach teachers about social-emotional development. Great short little trainings or PowerPoint if you're a child care center director. There's some short ones you can do if you're doing a faculty meeting that work well. If you are Head Start, what have you, that works well. But I was informed that Nebraska is a CEFL state. And I said, well, what exactly does that mean? And basically, it means that they received trainers and a lot of people who are trained who work in the Department of Education or Department or Office of Early Childhood Education who are trained to work with child care centers to give them this training. Another popular tool that has gained momentum is the CLASS, which looks at teacher interactions with children. And so that's something that we'll be talking about a little bit more as I go along. Another one that's used by some of our different child care centers and early care programs is the DECA, and that's in the blue there, the Devereaux Early Childhood Assessment. And basically, it assesses a child's social-emotional development. And so some of our centers like Educare use the DECA for children. And our public school, Omaha Public School, is our largest district, and they manage our Head Start programs, and they are excellent programs. I've seen Head Starts across the country, and some of y'all probably can relate. Some, you know, better than others, can depend on the management. They are really good, and some of the programs that are being used, not just even in Head Start, but all the way up to third grade, I've been told are second step. Now, when I ask some of my graduate students, have you used this? Do you use this in your class? It's like, no, we don't use it. So it's there. It's adopted. But that's a curriculum that is designed at each level. They start at pre-K and provide you a curriculum for teaching social-emotional skills like friendship, and different things as well, and they have puppets, and so I use that some in my classroom, but I'll talk about how I use it in just a few moments. Preschool. And let me back up and say that our early childhood endorsement focuses more so on pre-K-K. And so we don't do too much with infants and toddlers, because that's not necessarily our background and our training as teachers, but that's something we'll be looking at in the future as that becomes more important and more of an emphasis. So. All right, so some of the texts that I've found useful and that I use some chapters from some of these texts, and some I just use or reference as I'm teaching throughout the course. And so I kind of use effective practices early childhood. There's a couple of chapters in there about guiding young children in social emotional development. And I use that kind of as an outline for my course, some of the main topics that are discussed in those two chapters. And then I went back and filled in with more robust information. And I like the text, Me, You, Us. That's something I'll be adopting for the fall. And I use some chapters for guidance, education for a civil society, and a couple chapters from challenging behavior. Now, I would still like to use very practical texts that talk about how do you set up a classroom meeting? How do you talk about problem solving or conflict resolution? And so positive discipline, it's very practical. And it's written for teachers, and it's written by practitioners. And so what I found is, you know, you can talk theory all day long, okay? But a lot of times, we as teachers, especially when you're starting out, you just need to know, you know, what's a good way to do it, and then you can adapt from there. But a lot of times it helps to see a concrete model, and I feel that's what this book provides. Another one I use is Teaching Children to Care. That's a good one that's very practical as well, that talks about the value of classroom meetings and developing caring children. And then I use some chapters from Guiding Children's Behavior. And several of these are available through NACE's website or NACE's publications. But those are some of the texts that I found valuable. There are many more out there that you're free to use as well.
I'm having a little trouble seeing the blue one on the top right. And I just wondered what the title and the author are for that. Challenging Behavior.
I'm looking at a mic. Challenging Behavior in Young Children, and it's by Kaiser, Barbara Kaiser. And again, that one's on, I believe that's listed on Nancy's website as well. So I reviewed a lot of text, a lot. And again, this is what I use with my undergrads, not necessarily my graduate students. That's a whole other level. And what I'll be talking about today is mostly what I use with my undergrad students. I went a different route with my graduate students. Since they're already in the classroom, I felt they didn't need this basic information. We designed that course, or I designed that course, to be more so teacher research course, where they can identify a problem that they're having in regard to social-emotional development, or a challenge that they're having that they want to know more about, and then research in their classroom and apply different literature to their particular classroom. Sally?
Are you familiar with the program for toddler care?
No, I'm not. That'd be a good one. So Sally was suggesting, if you're an infant toddler, anybody infant toddler focused, the program for infant toddler care, which is a California program, is a good resource. And again, in just a moment, I'll give you a chance at your tables to talk about text that you've used and you found, and then we'll talk, you'll report out to us about what are some things that you really like and have found useful as well, okay? A couple of other ones that I liked, The Power of Guidance by Dan Cottrell. and betrayal, sorry, and what to do when. Those are just really, what to do when is really, really practical. It gets down to listing the specific behaviors you might see, like biting and things of that nature, and then, you know, some different suggestions for those specific behaviors. And so some of my teachers have said that's something that they found very helpful, at least gives them a starting point of how they might address that particular behavior. It does. It gives a little information, the way it's set up, it gives a little information about the why. She asked, does it talk about the why of the behavior? And so it'll list the behavior, talk a little bit about why or what might be the function of the behavior, and then give some suggestions about how you might approach it, okay? All right, so when I looked up, popular frameworks for approaching social-emotional development, of course, this is the pyramid model from Seffel. And it's widely used in the field. And if you look at the different levels, the bottom and the basis of this model is the necessity of nurturing and responsive relationships, okay? And the emphasis on relationships, and that's the foundation for supporting social emotional development, okay? And then next up is high quality supportive environment, okay? What do you need in your environment? How should it be set up? What are the routines and transitions? So that's what those supportive environments, that's what it's talking about. And then targeted social-emotional supports. So the argument is that it's not just enough to have those quality interactions with your children and relationships. It's not just enough to have that schedule every day or routines and consistency, but sometimes there are times we need to teach specific behaviors, teach specific, how do you develop social-emotional skills? How do you problem solve this particular situation? So that's what targeted social-emotional supports mean. And then at the very top, the intensive interventions. What do you have, or what do you do when you have those children with those intense behaviors, okay? And so that's at the very top because the argument is if you do all of those other things before, you should have a small percentage of your children that will need those intensive interventions. So once I looked at this framework, I said, okay, that's a nice place to start, but what's missing, okay? So when you go through all the information in the CEPHL website and curriculum, it's great information, but it wasn't all that I thought should be a part of the curriculum. So the topics that I came up with are pretty general. They're not exhaustive. So you may say, well, she forgot about self-regulation, or she forgot about, you know, other important topics. And so again, some of them are listed, but not all of them that I'm about to talk about. So whenever I start the course, I generally start talking about social-emotional development, what it is and why it's important. And then I talk about the pyramid, and we analyze the pyramid and why I talk about why it's important. There's a great short video that you can order from CEPHL that describes the pyramid and talks about it. Okay, so then I took that framework of building positive relationships and said, okay, what might that look like and what does that include? Okay, so for me, create community. Okay, and some of these topics that I have, I didn't just think of, they come from some of those texts. And this one comes from Me, You, and Us, but creating community and the value of creating community, that's one of our topics. And I talk about classroom meetings and how you might set those up. And a lot of my teachers I know are teaching in public schools where, you know, they're time, they have to go on to the next thing, and so they'll say, well, we don't have time for, you know, classroom meetings, but you can think about and encourage them, how do you incorporate some of the things you're doing throughout the day already into that classroom meeting and to focus on talking about different approaches like problem solving. You can do that during classroom meetings, okay? Another thing we talk about is building relationships. There's a great text I picked up just yesterday at the bookstore upstairs that talks about some strategies for developing relationships with children. And so we talk about that and the value of trust. My research is on trust, and so of course I bring that in and talk about the importance of establishing trust.
Just curious, what book were you talking about? What book are you referring to about creating those relationships that you got?
Powerful interaction.
powerful interaction and how to connect with children to extend their learning.
And it's in our...
Yep, upstairs in that bookstore. And again, you all may have other great resources that you've used that you can share as well, okay? Another important topic that I thought was missing from the pyramid, talked a little bit about it, but valuing diversity and that our children obviously come from very diverse backgrounds and what we may value or see as important may differ for our different children and our families. And then building observational skills. That's also a part of being able to observe children in the classroom with where they are and how a teacher is supporting social-emotional development. They have to be able to observe it first to understand it. And so some different observational tools that I use is that text developmental discipline, the CLASS and DECA. Implement one particular way. I try to expose them to a variety of different ways, and then we step back and say, what did you see in this particular assessment? What information did you get from this particular assessment that you didn't get from the other one? Okay, so that they can understand different assessments have different purposes and that you'll get different information and that you can't just rely on one assessment to get information. So then that next step in the pyramid, when I think about high-quality supportive environments, another topic was organizing the physical space and the day. Routines and transitions is part of that topic. So we look at some of those simple modules. I'll talk about those in a moment. But they have great pictures about some wonderful classrooms and how they've been organized to support children and to guide children. Then we also talk about establishing rules and giving directions, giving choices, the value of that, self-regulation and its importance. And then another topic, giving feedback and encouragement. One of the good videos that we use came out of HiSCOPE that I'll share in a few moments. But they have a good one about what do you say? What are the exact words? A lot of our teachers want to know, okay, so I'm supposed to give positive feedback, but what does that sound like? What are the exact words? And that video gives a good demonstration. So then when we talk about social-emotional teaching strategies, one of the topics we talk about is learning through play, okay? What is the value of play in supporting social-emotional development? What do children actually learn when they're playing together? How about developing friendship skills? Okay. And then what are some effective social-emotional curriculum? So we talk about Second Step. That was the curriculum I just shared with you. And then emotional literacy and using children's literature. And I'll give you some resources in a few minutes of what are some good books that might be valuable, and where you can find a list of books that might be valuable for you. Some additional topics, not necessarily associated with the pyramid, a couple of them are, but redirecting behavior. I thought that was important. So rather than always saying no, what other options might you give the child? Talking about logical consequences, problem solving, and then assessing individual social-emotional development, using different formal assessments for children. Again, developmental discipline, that comes out of that text guiding children's behavior. And then also talking about mistaken behavior. So oftentimes we think of misbehavior, they're misbehaving, and so it's a challenging behavior, but sometimes we just didn't understand what the child was trying to communicate. So we talk about mistaken behavior. And then lastly, we spend only a little bit of time on challenging behavior. I felt that CEPFL, the module, spend a lot of time on challenging behavior. But my argument is that if you do all these other things, and I feel like that's important for us to teach our teachers, setting up and spending time on all the building relationship supportive environments and social emotional supports, you shouldn't have to spend so much time on challenging behavior. Yes.
I have a couple thoughts. The first is the problem solving. Are you familiar with the solution cards in CEPFL? Those are amazing. Mm-hmm. I have seen a program, I've been in there 2 years in a row where they have a high percentage of low-income families and children, and so they really, and they really know their CEFL and their pyramid model, and they use those solution cards so well, and they teach all those skills of problem solving so well that both times I was in there, there were at least 5 major conflicts with those kids, mm-hmm. and those kids handled it themselves, and it was done within a minute, and it was so cool because they'd get the solution cards, and they'd say, well, let's try this, and the other one would shake their head, no, we're not going to do this one, and then the other kid would suggest another solution card to try, and finally they'd agree on one, and they'd do it, and that was it, and they were done. It was just beautiful to see. So I would really strongly encourage the use of those, or checking into the use of solution cards for problem solving. And then the challenging behavior. I have a program who had some challenging behaviors they were looking at, and they talked to a CEFL trainer, and they were, you know, or they thought they were challenging. Sometimes they aren't, and they think they are. So they were talking to the trainer and really, trying to figure out what to do and using all those data, VRS data things that you use. And what one of the other trainers came up and said is you need to go back probably to the bottom of the pyramid and focus on the base, the relationships and the environment. And knowing that program, that was true. And one person said to me, most people want to go to the top of that pyramid right away because they think, oh, we've got this challenging behavior, this kid needs extra intensive support, when really we need to check, and most of the time we need to go to the bottom and make sure that the bottom's in place. Because we may think it is, but it's not.
Yeah.
And that's usually the problem.
Right. Very, very true. Very true. Thank you for sharing.
Is the example she gave in a preschool or in a toddler setting?
The one that I was just talking about, the program, was an infant toddler room.
They use solution cards?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. The solution cards were used in a 4K classroom, but I have seen them used in a 2-year-old classroom well. I mean, you have to simplify things, but you teach it as simply as you can, and you begin to teach those things, and you scaffold and build and add on.
If you go on the CEFL website, there's a list that's taxi, but I'm not sure what it stands for. It's not that's for a lot of the solution cards.
There are great resources on that website that address a lot of these different areas, okay? And the last topic that I'll say, and then I'll let you all talk to each other, that I talk about that I also think is important is what happens with behavior or supporting social-emotional development beyond the classroom, okay? How do we talk with our families? How do we work with our families? And then what also happens when you've done all you can as a teacher, what resources are available to support you in the community you may be able to tap into, even if you're the child care director or the teacher in the child care center, you don't have a lot of resources. So we talk a lot about that as well, and I'll talk a little bit more specifically about each of these in a few moments. But I want you to spend the next few minutes and talk about what are some topics that you believe are important to address with teacher candidates or currently practicing teachers that you may be working with regarding social-emotional development and guiding young children. What texts and resources have you found to be beneficial to your curriculum and instruction, and what have you avoided and why? Okay, so I'll give you some time to talk about that, and then I'll kind of come out in the audience and ask you to, a couple of you all to report out. So I know we could talk forever about approaches and texts, but I'm going to come around to a couple of tables and ask you to share, you know, one really good one or something interesting you thought you'd like to share with everyone else. Okay, so I'll start over here.
do up on the bandage?
And like everybody points to the
other person. I guess I'll share for Arkansas, and this is not a class I currently teach, but our state has developed a certificate program, and it is for preschoolers. It's a preschool focus, and we call it Pre-K Ella, and it focuses on emotional and social development. So since it's a state certificate program, we work with the four-year institutions on a two-year, and we are able to embed that state certificate into our college course. So we use that program as well as a textbook, and they come out with not only their college credit, but also that certificate for a social-emotional training that is specific to our state. So some of our students are in the field, some of them aren't, but if they're in the field and they find out they're going to get that state certificate program, you know, as well, they're really excited. One of the other things we talked about that is kind of, I think, a little bit different, but maybe a topic that often comes up in our classes is just starting from the basic of validating children's emotions. You have the right to feel the way you feel, but then we have to look at the behavior in itself. But we talked about even we as parents sometimes will say, what are you crying about that for? Well, to that child, it's important. So our first place really is to validate where they are right then, and then decide how to best manage whatever the behavior issue or problem might be.
Thank you. In regards to validating emotions, I think Janet Lansbury is a great resource. If you just Google Janet Lansbury, I'm saying that right. I always want to say Angela Lansbury. It's Janet Lansbury, and she follows Magda Gerber. So she's very infant toddler oriented, but she really talks about respecting raising infant toddlers or caring for infant toddlers in a respectful way. And I think social emotional, I think we really need to, in our states, really encourage a real focus on that for infant toddlers. Because I think we look a lot at preschool, but infant toddlers, that's where it all starts. And so much, there's so much inappropriate expectation there for infant toddler teachers in regards to what they're really able to do, and how we need to come, we need to remember we need to be teaching these things from the time they're little. They don't understand what it means to be calm, and we need to teach those things. So I just think that we really need to encourage our states to look at infant toddler social emotional.
Yeah. And that's something I think I'm hearing more of, is an emphasis on infant toddlers in certain states.
Well, we had a couple ideas, but you know, the person sitting in front of me had a great idea that that's temperament. I think we talked about understanding some of the kids, but moreover, I think if we can get the teachers to understand and assimilate, accommodate to the students versus the students assimilating and accommodating to the teachers, preconceived notions of what is right and what is wrong, then we have a better understanding and thereby become stronger teachers. So for us, we're for my community, we go back and talk to teachers about the psychological aspect, maybe the human development of neurological development or lack of, versus just strategies and common methodologies of teaching, but understanding how a person really learns and how they come to be at that point. But as we outlined, temperament is one of the biggest things, and having them understand that it's not the kid being disrespectful to you, but rather probably maybe you're not being respectful of their background and coming to their table, so to speak, to get to what it is they need to learn and how to learn.
Thank you. So respecting the children, understanding and valuing that, that's what I'm hearing a lot of.
Great.
So now I'm going to talk a little bit about what are some learning experiences that I provide to address the topics that I've shared with you. Okay. So what are some things I actually do in my course with these teachers to reinforce some of the information? And again, we use some of the CEPHL modules. So if you go on their website again, there are PowerPoints already listed out for you on routines and transitions and problem solving, several different topics. And then I correlate those with whatever the topic is for that week. So I don't do a whole module in a day. Those are pretty extensive modules. I may just do 20 slides or whatever goes with that topic for the day.
And sometimes I use them, sometimes I don't. I try to mix up some things. And then we do a curriculum and assessment analysis as well. And I'll talk a bit about that in a moment. I have a panel come in who talks about some of the supports they provide for social emotional development, or if there's challenging behavior, what can they provide for the teachers. Obviously videos, we do case studies. And then they do an inquiry project where they're doing classroom observations. And I had to be really creative with this because, again, that course was originally designed in the evening, okay? So I switched it this coming up semester. It'll be during the daytime between the hours of 10 and 11:15. And so we partnered, or I partnered with Head Start programs, and they are usually in centers at that time from 10 to 11. And so they'll have an opportunity to actually work with the children and observe the children playing and engaging with one another. And so they'll be able to do some observations that correlate with our topics. And I'll talk a bit more about that in a moment as well. But before they do any of those observations, I'm having them interview the teacher first, okay? I think it would be interesting for them to ask, how do you think you're supporting social-emotional development? Tell me about your routines, and how did you and why did you set that up, so they can start to see how the teacher thinks about that process. And then lastly, using some more formal instruments. Again, class is becoming big in our state and maybe becoming something that they're required to do with this age group, so I thought that was important for them to know, as well as DECA. So the CEPHL modules, just to give you a little bit of information, the first module is promoting children's success, and so there's a lot of information in there. Regarding that, and then social-emotional teaching strategy shows you about how to use children's literature. And then the third module is determining the meaning of challenging behavior. And that's actually a part A and a part B to the third module. But like I said, it's very extensive, and we don't spend a lot of time with that particular topic. The curriculum assessment and analysis, just to give you some ideas if that's something you would want to do with your teachers, is we look at the curriculum, the second step curriculum, and I ask them to look at the different sections for whatever age group. I give them each a different age group. What do they like about the curriculum? And they have to teach a lesson to their group, to one another, and this is just in class. And then what do they think are the gaps in the curriculum? And some will point out very quickly, that seems a little odd, or I'm not sure how that would actually work in a setting. And then I ask them to think about what might you add to the curriculum? So how would you supplement this curriculum and in what ways, okay? And then in addition to analyzing the curriculum, the second thing I have them do is to analyze the different assessments that are out there. So we know that teaching strategies goal that goes with creative curriculum, there's a short little, there's an area where it talks about social emotional development. So I had them analyze those different instruments like DECA as well as class, and I asked them, what does this tool assess? Who does this tool assess? Is it the teacher or the child? And then a little Venn diagram. How do the tools compare and how do they contrast? So it's not just, here's a tool, this is what you should use, but it's also asking them to think critically about, is it assessing what you want to know? And if not, what are some other instruments you might use, or what information is missing, and is it appropriate for that context or for that child? Does it get at what you really have observed? Well, my understanding is that EduCare uses it as an assessment to get an idea of where they're at socially, emotionally. Right.
It's a point in time.
Yeah.
So then it's not an assessment, it would be a screener, to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So in addition to those assessments, doing the curriculum analysis and assessment analysis, Then we look at some different videos, and I mentioned this one. This one's available through HiSCOPE, Moving Past Praise, and we talk about encouragement and feedback. I found that to be useful because it shows the teachers exactly what words can you use with children to give feedback. What does that look like? What is good feedback? What does good praise look like instead of just saying good job, but being specific about what the child has done? And then the panel of community resources, we have in our city what's called Kid Squad, and basically they're trained in CEPHL, but they deal more so with that top of the pyramid. So they'll come in, even if you're in a child care center, even if you're a classroom teacher in the public schools, and if you call them and say, you know, I'm having a really hard time with, you know, understanding this child's behavior, it's very challenging, they'll come in, they'll send someone out, and they'll do the assessment. But then they'll also come in and help support you with strategies and things that maybe the teacher can't see on their own. And so it's kind of an ongoing support that they provide across the city. And then we have Behavin', which is a different type of service that's usually targeted toward families who can afford to pay to have their child assessed if there's challenging behavior. And then Boys Town, which deals more so with mental health. And they'll come in and talk about their resources that they provide. So I try to give teachers an idea of what are some community resources they can tap into if it's not available in their building. What resources can they seek out? And then the Book Nooks, again, that comes from the CEPHL website, but it basically gives them a list of good literature, children's literature, that they can use with children to talk about different things like friendship or their feelings, different feelings, and gives them some examples of how they might design centers, even if it's the art center. How do you carry that into the art center? Or how do you carry that into that theme into the science center? And so we do a guided practice together. And if you haven't read this book, I love that book. Sometimes My Mommy Gets Mad or My Mommy Gets Angry. It's a wonderful book. And I like it because it gives a different perspective of it's not the child that it's having a hard time with the behavior, it's mommy, okay? And we often don't talk about that. How do children end up feeling because of the parent's behavior? How does that affect the child? And so this book is lovely and it's really beautifully written because it shows what this particular child does when mommy gets angry. And how the child reacts and kind of protects themselves and the supports that are in place for that particular child. So anyway, I read that book, and we do a guided practice on developing a book nook, and then I have them develop their own book nooks down the road. Okay? And that's more systematic, and I'll talk about that in a moment. Okay? And so all these different ideas, I kind of was thinking, they need to be put together in some way that makes sense to the teacher because it seems like, oh, there's a lot going on that she's doing. And so I developed an inquiry project, how do teachers support emotional development? How do teachers guide young children? This is the big question for our course, or for our students. And this is what they're trying to understand in the context of the classroom that they're assigned to, okay? And so they have field experiences where they're doing observations in Head Start classrooms. And each time they go out, I'll show you in just a moment, they're looking or trying to understand certain things. So again, they're collecting data through these observations. They're interviewing the teacher to get a different perspective. They're using the class and the DECA, and then on a particular student. So they look at it from the class perspective, but then they also get practice using the DECA. And then what's a different assessment tool that they can use or some different ways to observe children or the classroom, and that's with using developmental assessment, that particular book, and looking at those forms and using those, okay? And then they present and share their findings and talk about what they found. So what are they exactly doing in their field experiences? So they only have really 45 minutes to an hour by the time they have to commute there and get back to their next class. This is how it's going to look in the fall. So the real purpose of these, they're only there, they'll probably only be there 8 times. And so it's really to try and start practicing some of those things we talk about in class, such as building those interactions. So we might talk about building relationships on Tuesday, and then when they go out on Thursday, I want them to try and implement some of those strategies with just even a small group of students, a couple of students, maybe it's one student, and they invite the child to come, would you like to play with me? And try and do some of those interactions with the child. So they're playing and building relationships, but also observing and documenting what they're observing. So for example, the first day they may go out, we may have talked about on Tuesday organizing physical space in the day, but their learning experience when they go out in the field, they're documenting through photos. How does that teacher have the room set up? So they may be taking pictures of what are the rules of that classroom? How does the teacher transition? What are the signs she uses for the procedures that she uses for hand washing? So they're documenting all of that, okay? And then when we talk about establishing rules and giving directions, okay, the class has a section of their instrument where they talk about, that kind of relates to that, talk about regard for student perspective. So using that to assess establishing rules and giving directions part of the class. Giving feedback and encouragement, so using the class to look at how does the teacher give feedback and encouragement. Another topic, learning through play. So just observing the children as they're playing in those centers, what skills were or were not being learned? What were the children saying to one another? What were they doing with one another? And then effective social-emotional curriculum. We talked about using children's literature, so maybe inviting the child to come read one of those stories with them that they develop. So that's just really simple, reading a story. I don't expect them to carry out the whole curriculum task that they created. And then six, redirecting behavior. So observing and even practicing if they have an opportunity, how might you implement a logical consequence or problem solving with that particular child. If, you know, so-and-so took my toy or I was playing with that, what are some words that you use? And we come back and talk about that. And then seven, assessing individual social-emotional development. So they may work with the teacher and she may help them decide on a child to use the DECA with to get an idea of the child. And then eight, developmental disciplines. Using those observation forms, we would have gone over that in class to get an idea of that child using those forms, okay? So again, using different methods of assessment or screener. So what are some learning experiences that you provide to your teachers or to your teacher candidates when you talk about social-emotional development? So when you talk about all those different topics, in addition to the resources and the text you might provide to them, what are some actual learning experiences that you give them to support them or to help them implement some of those ideas or those topics? Okay. So I want you to talk for a few moments, and then I'll come around and have some of y'all share.
All right. I teach early childhood in a high school setting. And one thing that we do is we want to make sure that our students know how it feels to be the parent, how it feels to be the teacher, how it feels to be the child. So what I have them do is I have these different social-emotional scenarios, and they have to act it out. And they're like, I'm not in a theater class. I said, I get that, but it will stick in your brain. Just trust me. So they act out these scenarios. It can be anywhere from a child throwing a temper tantrum to not sharing. To all these different things where they have to interact. And so one kid or one student is playing the child, one student is playing the adult, the teacher, and they have to act out the scenario in front of them. And then we discuss, how did it feel being that child? How did it feel being that teacher? Would you do the same thing? Would you, you know, try something else that's a little bit different? As a parent, what would you do at home compared to what you would do in the school setting?
Okay, so role playing. Good idea.
One of the things we use at my school is we actually have a camera inside each classroom, and that leads to a TV that we have in our office, so the teachers can come in, they can observe themselves on the tape, and they can see different things that you wouldn't see in the moment. We also use it as a training tool where we go back and point out different things that the teacher did positively or different areas that they can work on and different ways they can handle a solution to that behavior in the future.
So using those cameras, how many of y'all use cameras or video records your teachers and then go back?
Yay.
That's usually a really good strategy as well. So modeling for those teachers or coming into the classroom to actually help them so that they can see. All right, so the last section that I'm going to talk about, then I'll give you all time to create and develop in your groups. But the last one I want to talk about is assessment. So how are we assessing that our teachers understand social emotional development, understand how to guide children? My audience, I'll tell you, I was thinking most of my audience would be instructors or trainers or teacher educators, but I got a little bit of everything in here. So some of this, I'm realizing, probably doesn't apply all to you all, but hopefully you'll find some things valuable. But some of the things that I've used in my course are reading response charts to help with the reading, because readings come from different places. And so I need to know that they're reading and thinking about it. And so I asked them to give me a 5 to 7 sentence summary, something they found interesting, and then a question that particular article provoked. And that's something that I've seen some centers do with their teachers. They may give them a different article each month or ask them to read something different before each staff meeting, and then they'll talk about it. So that's usually a good way to promote discussion. Another thing I have them do is journal entries, and I only require, or I only read 3 of them, but they do it before they go out into the field where they examine and talk about what were ways that your parents guided you, or what were some strategies that they used to support you or not support you or your social emotional development. How did they discipline you? And that gets them to thinking about what are they doing that might have been rooted in how they were raised. And then the second one happens during their field experience, and so they're talking about what they're seeing, anything that they found interesting, and applying it to readings. And then after they finish the field experience, what was that like? What did they get from it, and how does it relate to the readings? And then the field experience reports, I'll talk to you in a moment. I talked about the book notes, and then I'll also talk about the portfolio, which gives them something to take with them when they leave, okay? Because, again, I said earlier that our teachers were having some trouble. You know, it was a bunch of theory beforehand. And so once they get out there, they're like, all right, what do I do the first day? How do I set up the rules and procedures? And what should my classroom even look like? And so that portfolio kind of gives them a toolkit for how to do that, okay? So I talked about the journal entries, but also the field experience reports. Again, they interview the teacher, because some of the information you get from the class or some of the other classroom observations may not explain why the teacher does what they do. It may overlook some things. So we can't rely on one form of assessment. So I ask them to talk to the teacher about what they're doing and why they're doing it. And then, what does the class reveal about the teacher's approach to social-emotional development, and how does it compare to what they stated in their interview, and what might it overlook? And then, again, using other instruments, and then just taking one child and looking at their social-emotional development, and what does the DECA say versus some other assessments. Okay. The book notes, based on the data they collect from the teacher in the class, I have them determine what's the theme that they're noticing in the classroom. So is the teacher saying, you know, I'm having a really hard time with sharing, okay? That seems to be a big problem, and I'm not sure, you know, how to address it. So that may be the theme they choose when they create their book notes, or that may be something I encourage them to choose. And so The book notes, the nice thing about it is they list the books that coincide with particular themes. And so they'll design the book nook around that particular theme that's a need in that particular class. So it's not just, you know, I chose a theme and here it is, but it actually has a purpose. And then their portfolio, I have an outline to go with each of the different points on that pyramid. So when they put together their portfolio, when they talk about building relationships, then in that section, what are some of the strategies that you used or that you saw that were used that help with building relationships? What were some of the assessment data? Because when they go out also for the job, they may be asked, you know, have you had experience with the class and some of the other assessment tools? And that'll be helpful for them to have. The second part of that pyramid, high quality environment. So again, it's that toolkit of what do some of those different environments look like? How are they set up? And so those photographs are in there. Targeted social emotional supports. What resources did they collect? So I encourage them to collect different resources that talk about ways to support social emotional development. They share amongst each other and keep a collection in that portfolio. And then lastly, challenging behavior, collecting resources that they can use for families that might be helpful. If the families ask, you know, gosh, I'm having a real hard time with this particular behavior, you know, what can I use for help? And so directing them to different resources. Okay? Yes.
I love the idea of the portfolio. I would like to encourage my teachers to use such a tool. I think that now being an administrative position, after being in a teaching position for a long time, one of the things as a teacher is just the fatigue and the burnout of all that's coming in. And so to present this as an additional tool, how can I frame it in a way that doesn't have underlined that additional teacher fatigue?
So that's a good question for my people who are in the field and working currently with their teachers. So would anybody like to respond? And I'll reframe her question she was asking. See, I'm teaching from a perspective of people who aren't necessarily in the classroom yet. So this is part of their assignment. They understand that's what they need to do. But if you have teachers you're working with who are teaching all day long and then you ask them to create a portfolio, how might you negotiate that with them? And how might you frame it in a way that they find it valuable?
Of the design of the professional learning communities, has anyone heard of those? And in a professional learning community, you can have documentation that has to be handed out, but then you collect it within the portfolio with artifacts demonstrated. And so if you get your teachers to understand that it's a place rather than something extra to do, it's just a way to house the material, that might offer you a way to approach it. Because what we try to do, and not everybody does, we're trying to work smarter rather than harder. So if your assessment has to be filed, et cetera, you do it once if you can avoid duplicating it.
I agree with what you said, and I think that teachers need to know that these are the things that they need to be doing, not only for the kids, but also to empower themselves to be the best teachers they can be, and it will make their day so much better, and their enjoyment of the children they teach. And so it's really all the stuff they're doing, but like you said, it's where do you put it, so that you can be more reflective and more intentional about what you do. Because I think if you have a place where you can go and look at what you've done and figure out, did this work, why didn't this work, and what can I try that's different, you're going to be a better teacher.
Thank you. And I think for many of the people who've been successful from what I've seen in childcare settings is that they understand it, and they explain that it's an expectation from day one. That this is, you're documenting and you're evaluating yourself through this process. So it's not just, you know, used as a tool for you or a place for you to collect all this stuff, but it's also a place where you're documenting your work. And then we go back and sit down together and talk about what you views how you've used it. So it's not viewed as just something extra as well. So you come back to it.
I realize some of you may have been exposed to Brain Gym, but it wasn't mentioned, so I'm trying to offer that as a resource. The Brain Gym activities I use with the high school students as our bell work. It kind of faded, but we're still trying. Students do actual movement and motion and breathing exercises and other activities which help them self-regulate. And then the high school students that go into the child care lab can then practice those skills with the kids, and then those children get those skills about self-regulating. And that's the intention of Brain Gym.
Pardon?
Right. It incorporates all of those things.
Thank you.
I was just going to add, one of the things that we've done with the portfolio is incorporated in part of their planning time so that the teachers then know that, you know, during their planning time, and if we need to, you know, so we look at it to make sure that they have enough time during that, or if we need to offer, sometimes we bring in a support person to relieve the teachers during a quieter part of the day, that, you know, that way they can have maybe, you know, 30 minutes or 20 minutes even to work on it. It just, they feel very supported then in doing the work.
Thank you. All right. So, last group question, and then you'll work in your group to develop your own strategy. But how do you assess your students' understanding of social-emotional development, or your teachers' understandings of social-emotional development and how they guide children? So what are you using to assess your teachers or teacher candidate?
Yes, she kind of heard me mention a lot of things that we use that, you know, different from everybody else. And I kind of listened to what everybody else was saying, and I can take that and implement where I'm at.
Thank you. I get to every table.
So we have a question.
Yeah. Sure. In Wisconsin, we're also a pyramid model state, and so we've been implementing this, and we kind of took the pyramid model and changed it up a little bit, but we still present the same material, but I think we do it in 8 or 9 sessions, modules. But at the beginning of each session, we look at an inventory of practices. These are the good things you should be doing, and each teacher or person there has to look at that and check, do I do this or not? And then at the end, you're supposed to take something, look at that list, and then choose 2 to 3 goals that you have for things you might try and implement into your practice. And then you report back the next training, these are the things I tried, how did it work, what, and then you talk about, people give feedback as to how they could fix, how you could try something different or new. So I'm wondering, is that part of, I'm not sure if that's part of the FEPL website or if that's something Wisconsin has added in. Do you have any idea?
No, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Like I said, I never did the formal FEPL training. It was kind of fly by the pants and learning through the modules as I went along. So I don't remember seeing it formally, but that doesn't mean it's not there.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking that inventory of practices might be a nice, real way to have students look at if they've had experience in the classroom. Some of them have, and some of them haven't. And then you just, you know, this is, they have to go by what they think they would do, I guess. But to really look at and reflect on what they do or think they would do, and then what they might try. So.
Something that you haven't done in your curriculum and in your classroom setting, and that's how we only use self-evaluation.
We do all of those things, and it might be linked to something. Like I think every state has something totally different, but we choose that as a, we call that as a self-evaluation assessment for ourselves, and then you have your peers that come in and do one for you also.
Yeah. So Felicia was saying, you know, that's something that they implement in their program, the self-evaluation first.
Well, one of the things we were saying was hard is that you can, you know, test the knowledge of a student and that they understand it, but that doesn't mean they can know how to put it into practice.
Right. That's very true. It's very true. And then, so when they get to student teaching, you may see something totally different. It's very true. Yep. Alright, so this last several minutes, I'm going to give you all the opportunity to work in your groups and come up with some topics that you're interested in or that you have struggled to teach yourself, and I just listed those as some examples that I try and think about. How do I want to teach creating community? How do I want to model that for my students? What might that look like for my students, or if I'm a center director, how do I model that for my teachers if I'm designing a little training? So is there something specific that you realize is a need in your program, whatever it might be, whether you're in higher ed, whether you're in the field, that you feel would be valuable for your teachers? And then what are some steps that you might take to facilitate that learning for your teachers? Okay, so I want you to decide on a topic, and you can do it as a table. You can decide on a topic, and someone might say, well, you know, I'm really having trouble with this. Can you all give me some ideas or help me? And then brainstorm some effective learning strategies that might be helpful for that particular topic.